Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, I'm in El Paso, Texas, getting ready for the big SBE Ennis workshop. That's coming up on Friday. But right now, we're talking to Tyler Everett of Pippin Technical Service in Canada. Tyler and his team have invented some pretty cool devices that plug right into your LiveWire AOIP network. And Tyler's got some great advice at the end of the show. Stay tuned for that, where he talks about let's make sure we're looking at other industries and stealing, taking, borrowing, learning what we can from them. It's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from, microphone, maybe this one, to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I don't have a light bulb here today. In fact, I just realized I can turn this other light on. That's been too much out here in the Texas sun. I am in El Paso, Texas at the Wyndham Hotel. They've been so accommodating. Really appreciate their help. The Wyndham Hotel, right across from the airport. It's just a walk from baggage claim at the airport over to the Wyndham Hotel. And we're getting ready to do the SBE Ennis workshop here in El Paso. That's tomorrow. So people like Jeff Welton and Mike Pappas and Fred Baumgartner, they're all coming in to have dinner together tonight. We're going to go to some steak place, of course, it being West Texas. And then we're going to do the Ennis workshop tomorrow and get ourselves and other folks educated in broadcast things. So again, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is not able to join us today. He's got some field work going on. I'm sure he'll tell us about that. But we do have a fantastic guest, and I've been waiting actually since February to have this guy on the show with us, and that's Tyler Everett of Pippin Technical Services in Canada. Tyler, welcome in. Good to see you.
Great to be seen. Thanks for having me. This is coming to you from Saskatoon, not quite as exciting as El Paso, Texas, but we like it here.
Now, Saskatoon, you guys aren't sending us wildfires and wildfire smoke, are you? That's in a different part of Canada.
Yeah, actually, most of Quebec is on fire right now, but all jokes aside, we always make jokes about that, but now it's actually happening. It sounds like it's actually quite serious, but I'm hearing even, was it LaGuardia was shut down for a while because of the smoke coming from Canada, so we're certainly thinking about everyone who's associated with that. We did have some fire issues in the western part of the country earlier in the spring, and some of our broadcast colleagues got caught up in some of the emergencies that go along with sites in forests and such. So we're always thinking about, you know, the first responders and also the broadcast people who typically get caught up in these kinds of things. So it's kind of tragic, but kind of part of it these days.
Yeah, it's tragic. Whenever there's fire, you know, lives are at risk. Of course, firefighters, but also people with homes and businesses that are in the way of a moving fire. So we wish people as well as they could possibly be and hope they can get the fires under control as soon as possible. Of course, people complain. People say, oh, look at all these fires. Look at all these fires. We've never had fires like these before. Well, I don't have Canadian statistics, but in the U.S., wildfire burn acreage is literally down 95% from where it was a century ago. A century or 100 to 110 to 120 years ago, the burn acreage was just incredible back then. And this was even before the Dust Bowl years of the 1930s. So yeah, wildfires are bad no matter when they happen, but the burn acreage would have to increase by a factor of about 20 in the U.S. before it got up to what it was when they first started keeping track of such things. But no matter, that's not a show about burn acreage or climate change. It's a show about broadcast technology, and I'm delighted to have Tyler with us. So just to give you a little, Tyler, you tease us. Tell us what are some cool things we're going to look at, some technology that, without giving the whole store away, what are we going to look at today?
Well, I appreciate that. The thing is, our company's on a little bit of a pivot. We're going to continue to do everything that we've always done. And if the last time I was on your show was number 405. Yes, I keep track. We were on 405. a few years ago, and that was when we first took over this company, and we talked a lot about what we were doing. And now we're here to talk a little bit about some of the changes. The first big change that I love talking about is our new facility. We're here in the what we call the Dream Factory. It was actually a sound stage at one point in its life. It's a very big, very open area that we multi-purpose, and we usually use it for assembly. As you can see behind me, there's a studio being assembled right now. And one of the things that we're getting into is making stuff. As an integrator and an equipment supplier, we often run into things where our installers come back and say, how come nobody makes one of these? So we started listening to that and started looking at making one of those and one of these and one of those and one of those. And so we have a list of things. We're going to talk about a few of the things that we have that we're now ready to ship and are shipping, and you know, tease maybe a few of the things that we're thinking about. And everything we're going to talk about today is based on feedback, based on what we see out there. So we're always looking for feedback. If anybody is looking for something and no one makes it, I'm happy to hear from you, and maybe we can fill a void and give you credit for it. So we're here to try to help make the industry move forward.
So just to tease it a bit more, you guys are making some things that connect directly to audio over IP networks and do things. So you're no longer dependent upon a simple contact closure, GPIO, collector to ground sort of thing. You are talking directly with other AOIP devices, with devices that you're making. And this is one of the really cool things about when the level of technical knowledge and best practices goes up, you know, in a technology, then more and more people start to do these things. And so we're gonna show other engineers, and myself included, some of the cool things that you guys can do. Hey, real quick, our show is brought to you in part by Nautel and the Nautel Transmission Talk Tuesdays. Those are continue the summer, not every week, but there are quite a few of them going on. And the next one is scheduled for Tuesday, June the 20th. If you go to nautel.com/webinars and then click on Transmission Talk Tuesdays, you can go sign up for the June 20th one. It's about next-gen talent, education, and mentoring. That's part of what we're doing, well, first of all, on this show, This Week in Radio Tech, but it's also what I'm doing along with some other folks here in El Paso, Texas. Nautel is participating in the Ennis because they've sent Jeff Welton here to talk about his usual things, grounding and HD radio and things like that. But at nautel.com/webinars, you can sign up. You can sign up not only for the June 20th one, but look, go ahead and take a moment. Just click on July 18th, combiners and filters, and August 1st topic, what's up with EAS? We talked about that on our show last week, and I know that Jeff will have a really intelligent and well-thought-out discussion on EAS. So three things coming up, June, July, and August, at nautel.com/webinars. And I'm excited to be meeting up with Jeff Welton tonight for dinner, and then we'll see him tomorrow as well. Nautel, you know, full line of AM transmitters, FM transmitters, digital systems for DAB and for HD radio, and a lot of resources there on the website. So check those out. Thanks, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Tyler and I got a chance to meet up last February at Telos Alliance in Cleveland, Ohio. We had our elite dealer meeting, where we bring in our best and brightest and sharpest dealers into Telos Alliance, and we have a meeting. And Tyler pulls me aside, and he points out some of these cool things that they've started developing. So, Tyler, why don't you jump right in and tell us what's going on with these things, that this new division, this new thing that you're doing at Pippin Technical.
Sure thing. Well, the first thing I wanted to say was brought to you by Nautel. The camera that I'm talking into is actually sitting on a Nautel AM transmitter. So I've literally got Nautel between my legs right now. So moving on from that, though, one of the things, we've been an Axie dealer for... this is my 20th year with the company, and we've been an Axia dealer since about year one. So we're coming up on 20 years that we've been doing Axia. And so we've learned a few things along the way. And one of the things I really love about all the networked audio is it's very elegant. One of the areas that we thought we could really improve on the elegance is on the GPIO side. The audio is very elegant. It does a lot of really cool things. And we always, this is one of the areas that we always seem to be spending a lot of time in an installation is wiring up GPIO for things. And so, and one of them was, and it's a longer story. I'll try to keep it short because I know we only have an hour, but I could probably talk for 3 hours about all this stuff. But, you know, one of the projects that we were working on was a VX telephone system. And somebody said, do you guys make anything that we could notify us when there's a telephone call? And we were actually in a development cycle on a different product that is yet to be revealed. But we realized some of the work we were doing could actually be done quickly to get a product made available. And so that's what we did, is we created a means of notifying jocks or operators when there's a phone call through a flashing light. And none of this sounds very, very new. So when the call comes in, you're going to get something like that, a flashing light. And so you know that the phone is ringing. And that is a product we call Beacon. And I know you're thinking, well, there's nothing really all that special about Beacon. But what is special about Beacon is how we do it. And how we do it is that we basically have written it into our own DSP. And that light that you just saw flashing has one wire, and it connects to an Ethernet switch, not to a GPIO port, not to power or anything like that. We actually use PoE to drive those LEDs to flash that light. And the Beacon itself, here's what, actually have one right here. Here's what the Beacon looks like. Now this system right here is actually a circuit board that we've made. Okay, so we've put that in. So the only thing you have to plug in is a very familiar thing, that right there. And our board on this side is what's doing all the heavy lifting. Actually, you can even see we've got our logo on there, right up there at the top. So this is what is going to do all the work. This has an embedded web server. You're going to go to the default IP address. You're going to tell it what channel to watch for, which is the ringing channel on your VX system. And when it senses a GPIO there, a virtual GPIO, it simply flashes the light. Really simple, but also a subset of some other things that we're working on within our company. And that's our first product that we have. We've got stock. We're ready to ship that. And, well, we are shipping that. We've got a few orders have already been satisfied. Some of the feedback that we got, and it's actually kind of a funny story. When we first did the first round, the guys were using about four LEDs in there. And I saw in this Dream Factory, the lights were turned off, and I was really underwhelmed by the notification, the flashing light. I said, like, that thing's got to shout at people. The phone's ringing. Come answer me. Like, that's what a flashing light, that's what a phone flasher should do. It should be a big thing. So we actually used a light system with, I don't know, there's probably about 20 LEDs on there. I don't know, it's kind of washing out, but there you go.
Oh, wow.
So there's a whole bunch of LEDs on that. And we shipped that, and our first customer shipped them back and said, we can't use this. It's way too bright. So that was my fault. I got excited, put too many lights in. So we had to go back, and we now have an adjustment. So you can adjust that intensity for a dark room, a small dark room. Yes. Yeah. We actually added an intensity, and we went old school on that. It's a get out your little tweaker that everybody has one, right? And there's a little pot that we installed. So just a current limiting system, the circuit there. Then we just turned down the current
I thought you might have gone full web services on that, and you choose it from the web page, and it determines how many lights come on, you know. And now I know you don't need ideas on what to do next, but from the web page you could pick what color it would flash, you know, because you'd have like different LEDs populated on there, and you know, some would be multicolor LEDs, and then you drive them with different amounts of current and all that kind of stuff. You know,
headed with our next project actually. So
well, see, it deals with this based on which closure it gets from the VX. So if it's the hotline ring and you know it's the GM or the PD and the thing's bright red, you got to answer this. You know, if it's the pizza guy out front saying, "Hey, I got your pizza here," you know, come down and get it. Well, that's a different color. And then if it's just a phone call from a listener caller, you know, then it's something that's not quite so exciting.
Yeah, or when your spouse calls, that the that's when it doesn't flash at all.
No. No, but so I got to ask you about, you showed that circuit board, and it's lovely to see those big LSI, large scale integration devices on there. Can you give me, what does this thing cost at retail? What do you sell these for?
Those are selling for, the Beacon itself sells for $350 in Canada, and I think it's in the $280, $275 type price for the United States. We do have a dealer in the U.S. We're actually launching global dealership for all of this stuff. That's another thing that our company is working on, is making these products available worldwide, which is one of the reasons I went POE. Everything we make here, I want to run on POE. I don't want to mess with DC. I certainly don't want to mess with AC and all of the certifications that have to go along with that kind of stuff. It's from a manufacturer's point of view. Why would we bother when the world should be running on DC? Even though I'm a Tesla fan more than an Edison fan, if anybody knows that story, I'm much into running everything on POE. And there's a story behind that too. There's a story behind almost every decision I make. And we had made a product called Charon a couple of years ago. And even though we specified the DC plug and the DC connector as the exact same one, because they came from two different manufacturers, they didn't work. So now I've got a whole bunch. If anybody needs any DC wall warts, I've got lots of stock. So we had to double up on all of that. So from the lesson I learned from that was, I've never seen an RJ45 that doesn't work. We're going POE on everything. And if people don't have a POE switch, you just use an injector and you're taken care of. So to me, it's a beautiful standard for powering things. The first product development meetings were great, because everybody was looking at me like, we can't possibly make all this work on POE. And all I said was, if Telos can run an X node on POE, we can run all this stuff that we're trying to do on POE. And so that challenge was accepted. And so that's what we do, is we try to drive everything that we make with POE. And in fact, the latest product, which you're kind of dovetailing into with some of those other light ideas that we want to do, is called Aurora. There's the board for it right there. And that's actually in this shot. You can see this light flashing behind my head right there. That's Aurora. Yep. And you'll see you're doing different colors. We're doing flash patterns. And we've got a whole bunch of Easter eggs in this one, different things that it can do for your studio. We're going to drive a Mika 4 stack plus 4 of those mic boom lights. And that's all, again, going to be over a Ethernet connection back to your Axia Livewire network. So that, again, is trying to make the elegance of GPIO. Instead of spending all your time on your back, wiring, screwing into terminals, soldering, and all these kinds of things, or even using GPIO nodes, we're erasing all of that. You put one of these Auroras in, and it even comes with a rack kit that allows you to put it right beside your MicX node. It goes like this. You attach to your MicX node, and now you can put this whole system into one rack space with a MicX node. We're working on the faceplate right now. This is one of our prototype boxes that we're looking at here. And that allows you to be able to, in one rack unit, have all your 4 mic inputs and then control a bunch of lights in your studios. Just like you said, different colors. We have flash patterns. We're using pulse width modulation on that. So PWM for different effects and stuff like that. So there's a lot. And it's all going to be web controlled. So you just log into it and make whatever changes you want. We've actually added a new developer onto our staff recently. He's been here maybe 3 weeks, and he's already hard to keep up with. Really smart guy. So yeah, it's hard not to be excited about some of the things we have coming up.
Cool. Hey, you mentioned that you told your developers, look, everything we remake that can possibly be run off POE, let's do that. And my goodness, that does make wiring a lot simpler. I've got a number of POE devices at my own house. Typically, they're going to be webcams, or some of the Telos devices are that I have at my office. Tell me what you know about POE, about either the different standards. Is there smart POE? Is there dumb POE? It seems like there is a difference there. I see some routers that are really simple and dumb, and they'll provide you with 48 volts. They won't measure it, do anything about it, warn you if it changes. You know, that's all on you. But then there's smart POE, where a switch, you know, monitors how much current's being drawn, and you can set limits, and you can have it, shut the port down, or you can have it notify you, probably SNMP, that there's something wrong. What do you know about this?
Well, basically, I mean, our focus is on how much are we going to draw, and we know that you know, you certainly can't run a bunch of light bulbs, big light bulbs, off of each port off of a switch. We know each switch is going to have its own limitations as to how much, and so we have to. And we've talked a bit. You know, the focus that we have is: are we on PoE plus, plus plus, and all that kind of thing. So, from our developer point of view, if there's smarts built in that can help manage all of that kind of thing, that's really important. And as you know, I think almost broadcast engineers, and I was one as well, we like to have control, and you love to have as much knowledge about what's happening as possible. So those are all really great technologies to help grow that and move it forward, and allow us to budget for it. And as more products are made available, like what we're trying to do, that focus on making use of it, it's going to increase the need for that as we go along. I suspect then there will be a slew of different dashboard products that, if they're not already available, that will allow you. Maybe that's something we'll be working towards as well, is integrating that into some of what we do. Our focus right now is when we land at different levels and of power usage, because we know that we want, for certain products, we want to stay under the standard, the first level of PoE, and then the plus level, and then, you know, where do we have to go? Because I know one of the boxes that we're making, they kind of wanted to add a 12 volt on there, because if we do all these things at once, it's going to be taking a lot of power. And I kind of try to push back on that. I really try to make sure we don't go to external power. But our focus mostly is on just trying to hit those limits of what each type of PoE offer us, and stay under those, and then try to kind of only take what we need and not get too greedy with it. Because we know the switches are going to probably be used to drive other things. But you know, if you've got a bunch of V-sets on there and maybe a couple of other devices, another couple of X nodes, there's a lot going on. And so we'd only want to sort of take our share.
Gotcha. Hey, we're talking to Tyler Everett. He is the president and CEO of Pippin Technical Services. They're in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. And if you think that's kind of the middle of nowhere, well, it is a drive. It's a drive from there to about anywhere. But they're out there where they have time to think, time to work, and they really do service broadcasters all over Canada. And they started out doing all kinds of RF work and studio work. And now that Tyler's running things, they are even more into development of new products. And they got a whole line called PTS Gear. PTS stands, I guess, for Pippin Technical Service. And they have this whole line of things. And I think it's really cool that they're designing things to work with other industry standards. One of them, of course, being LiveWire's GPIO standard. That is really cool. And then, you know, industry standards like power over Ethernet. We're going to get into some more things that Tyler and his crew are doing here in just a couple minutes. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack. I am in El Paso, Texas at the beautiful Wyndham Hotel at the airport. It's just a short walk across the parking lot to the hotel. We're going to have the SBE's Ennis Workshop going on here tomorrow. So we're gathering some industry engineers all together here at the Wyndham, and going to have a full day of education tomorrow. All right. Our show is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. And Angry Audio is, they're down the road from me, actually, in Franklin, Tennessee. And that's where Mike Dosh and his team of developers put together these amazing products that Angry Audio does. Of course, they are still manufacturing many of the Studio Hub products, the favorite ones that you know and love, and that's a great line. But they also make a number of different products for you know, keeping your broadcasting system together. All kinds of things. You know, they make lights too, although they don't yet make any lights that connect right directly to LiveWire. There's the Bluetooth audio gadget. There's balancing devices. There's the new USB analog interface that it doesn't have any knobs on it. Doesn't have any knobs for this jockey to accidentally turn down. It's fixed level in and out, but it's all professional levels. And so this will take professional balanced audio in and out of a USB connection. And it is heavy duty. Oh, my goodness. It is just amazing. They make other products to let you, you know, mute your microphone, headphone amplifiers, things like that. The headphone disconnector is pretty cool. In fact, I've got one of those right here. In fact, tell you what, Suncast, why don't you put the camera back on me? I want to show you something. For doing remotes like this, I recently picked up this little Tascam. This Zoom mixer. And I kind of like it. It's got a USB connection, goes right to my laptop, and I can plug several headsets like this one right into it. But you know what is a little bit annoying It came with the small, the 3.5 millimeter headphone jacks on it. And I've got these headsets, these Audio-Technica headsets that have the quarter inch tip ring sleeve connector. So look what I did. I went to Mike Dosh and I said, I want to buy some headphone disc connectors that let me plug in my quarter inch tip ring sleeve headphone, go through your magnetic disconnect, and then right here, they go into the 3.5 millimeter. And you know, you can have people tug on these and break something off pretty easily, but guess what? With the headphone disconnector, whoop, there you go. Just comes right apart. It's magnetically held in place and it magnetically pops right back together. That's a great use for the headphone disconnector. So check that out from Angry Audio and lots of other new devices, even a new analog audio console that's shipping soon called Rave. That's a neat little device. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, we're also brought to you by MaxConnect Wireless. I just talked to their office there today at MaxConnect Wireless. Got a great tech support call back really quickly. And, you know, they're famous for their 4G LTE modem service where you are on a prioritized network that Josh Bone worked out with several of the big carriers. Here's our friend Gary Morrill to tell you about it.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about MaxConnect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using MaxConnect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. MaxConnect. Check it out.
Check out their website. It's MaxConnect. I know it's spelled funny because it's the internet and they're out of names, right? So MaxConnect for MaxConnect.com. Or MaxConnect Wireless. That's their original site.com. I've got one of these right here. Carry it with me almost everywhere I go in case I need some internet right away. So thanks a lot, Josh Bone, and everybody at MaxConnect. Okay, it's This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 647th episode. Suncast is at the controls, making things right. And my guest today is Tyler Everett. I've known Tyler for years and years and years. We got to meet when I was the International Sales Director at Telos Alliance. And Tyler worked for Pippin Technical Service, and now he runs the place. I think he owns the place. So, Tyler, when was it that we met, Tyler? Was it back around 2005, 6, 7, somewhere in there? Did you work for Pippin then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I started in April of 2003, April 1st. Biggest fool ever, I suppose, was me coming to work for Pippin Technical. Started on April 1st, 2003, so just had my 20th anniversary, and you and I would have met right after that. I was on a plane to NAB within 3 or 4 days because it was an early NAB year, and it was like that next weekend I was to NAB. So if we didn't meet in 03, we definitely met in 04. And we met – I also knew you from your Scott Studios days as well. So,
That's right. Yeah. That was the mid 90s when, wow.
We're both kind of old.
Oh my gosh. How come I got gray hair and you don't? You look so much younger than I, you are younger than I am. So there you go.
Not much, but a little, maybe a little bit. Yeah. It's common. It's trying. I just keep cutting it shorter and shorter so you can't see it.
I got 10 grandkids. How many you got?
I don't have any.
None yet.
No, yeah. But yeah. I have two daughters that don't like hearing my stories about why they, because I'm trying to keep them away from guys like me. So,
yeah. I hear you. Well, so this this first product, one of these products, the Beacon. You've got this Aurora. Tell me again what Aurora does. That you kind of buzzed through that, and I missed it.
Yeah, sure. Aurora is exciting. Now, remember I said earlier how Beacon was a subset of another project. Beacon is also a subset of another project. So we actually have a really, really cool thing we're going to launch eventually if we just stop stealing technology out of it and using it for other things. So we have another one called Aurora. And Aurora is, of course, Aurora Borealis, Northern Lights. We're a northern place. And where this one is to control lights. So that's kind of where the naming comes from. I have to give a lot of credit to Grant Ebrick. He's I hired him to be a sales guy, but he's so much more than that. He's really big part of our marketing, our image, but also a lot of the ideas that we see. He's huge into a lot of that stuff. He's a gear guy. He's a tweaking kind of a guy, loves to mess around with stuff. And he's today's floor producer here. So he's wandering around off camera in case anything is necessary. I need his help with anything. But Grant's just a great, great guy. So Grant is really, I consider Aurora to be his project. And this is one where we are, you had mentioned Angry Audio and their lights not connecting to a LiveWire network. Actually, they can connect to a LiveWire network through our product called Aurora. So what Aurora is going to do is control a stack of lights like Mike Dosh's Angry Audio lights or the Mika stack of lights. And that's what we have happening okay. over my shoulder here is we've got a light flashing on a Mika boom, and that is being controlled by an Aurora or one of our prototypes. So it's obviously just doing something fun just to illustrate what we can do.
Right.
But that's what it's going to do, and it's going to control up to five Mika lights and up to four on-air lights. And as you can see, we're accessing both colors. And you're going to be able to have full control over the context of when those lights go and why. And then we're going to build in things like intensity, flash patterns, and even so that the, as I understand it with our new developer, Evan and Grant, they've been talking about making a visual representation. So you could draw a flash pattern and then we'll do our best to replicate that. So this is the kind of stuff that Aurora is going to be doing for us. So the beacon was my kind of my project, and it's literally plug it in, make it flash. That's it. One color, one thing. It's a one trick pony. The biggest thing is you can make this thing flash doing whatever you want, but it's just a flashing light. But the Aurora is the one that's really configurable, different things, many different lights, lots of different things. And we are victims of our feature creep problem here, because every time we get together and talk about it, we think of another really cool thing that we can make it do. So look forward to that. That'll be, I think, shipping by the end of summer. We really want to basically bring that with us to the trade shows that come up in the fall. We've got CCBE and Wabi, and so our goal is to have that with us. For those shows, so we can show people what we can do with that.
I always wonder how many on-air talent are vision impaired, and what, of course, we have all these flashing lights, even with the flash patterns. That's all really cool. It used to be that it seems like vision impaired people were accommodated by some interesting ways, like Braille on the cart label. I've seen that at stations. I really have no clue as to how many vision impaired people there are working in broadcast. But wouldn't it be cool if instead of flashing a light, you had a Bluetooth to, say, a buzzer ring that people would wear and make something vibrate, you know, or a key fob. I don't know, something that would alert them with a flash pattern. That would be interesting. Not that you need more stuff to work on. You've got plenty of.
Actually, you've already touched off a couple of ideas that we could implement with that. So I'll make sure Grant watches this show and we'll chat about it after. We love just sitting around talking about stuff like that and coming up with ideas. It's a lot of fun. So, and actually, so, I have quite a few of ideas that we're working on.
You had talked about a speaker that would be PoE powered and would be live wire direct. Tell me what's going on there.
So, we have a website for all this stuff, by the way, ptsgear.com, just like it sounds, ptsgear.com. And you'll see all the things that we have that we're working on right now that are shipping. And one of them is the PT speaker. And you mentioned that PTS stands for Pippin Technical Service. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it stands for other things. And in this case, PT speaker is PTSPKR. And S is speaker, and PKR could be passive kinetic resonator, because where we started with sure. with the speaker is, and there's one actually a set right here over my shoulder. Those are our speakers. They are, again, now shipping. What we realized as integrators is passive speakers are getting really hard to get our hands on. And in fact, I bought the last of the KR case passives a couple of years ago, and we realized we're going to have to make our own. So we did, and we are actually manufacturing those in-house. Their paint booth is actually right above my head, where I shoot paint and paint them up here locally in our shop. We assemble them here and put them together. We took two trips to the Anacook Chamber at the University of Saskatchewan. We really appreciate their giving us the run of that place a couple of times, where we did all of our testing. We ran different EQ curves. We really worked hard to make them. They were started out to be just a no-nonsense monitor for confidence monitoring. But they actually, I have to admit, I'm pretty impressed with the way they turned out. They sound great. They're a really nice speaker. So the first iteration of these are passives. Hook them up to your favorite amplifier and away you go. I think one of the reasons why so many speakers these days are active is because in order to really control how they sound, the manufacturers want to have the amplifier too. I think there's a lot of DSP things going on in there and stuff. So this way they can make them sound the way they want them to sound.
Sure.
For us, for us, we're not as concerned about that. So of course, as you said, where do we go from here? And we are looking at running them in a way that would skip over certain elements like amplifiers and stuff like that. So I guess we'll wind up in the active arena as well, because we want to build an amplifier that is live wire driven or AES-67. And I guess if we're going to do an amp, well, heck, we might as well just split it in half and put one on the back of each speaker. So that's the roadmap, I guess. People love using that word. That's the path we see happening for the speakers, is we're going to move towards putting amplification on them, and then you plug that directly into your switch. So for now, we want the world to know about our passives. They sound really good, great confidence monitor, but they'll hold their own against, usually this shelf behind me has got a set of 8030 Genelex. And so we've done a ton of listening. That room you see behind me, see the right there, that window, there's actually our lounge where we do all of our critical listening, because it's a nice sound treated room. And we go up there, and that's where the speakers are tested for before they're finally packaged into the boxes and off they go. So as the paint booth is just around the corner from that. So we do all of that in-house here, and we even do the testing in here. We've got a few people that brag about knowing what they're listening to. We've got a few good ears. So we've spent a lot of time on that, and it's a pretty exciting project.
Wow. And of course, I was kind of kidding about PoE powered speakers. You could do PoE powered headphones, I would think. I don't know when, you know, if the dollar ratio is worth it there, you're putting a lot of electronics on your ears, unless you could do a PoE powered headphone amp. Yep. That would, you know, go along with a console. Yeah. That might be interesting.
Q speaker is another one, you know, like little Q speaker that has an amplifier built in and all that kind of thing. Building a little turret box that kind of does it all. We've got all kinds of ideas that we're working on. And like you say, it's a matter of making it work financially. We know you're not hitting the consumer market with this. It's a broadcast market. It has a certain size. And so drawing up the business plan, my business partner, I actually use the line that you have a lot, Kirk, that I'm the half owner of this business. I own the half that doesn't make any money, but actually I own the half that spends all the money. But I'm lucky enough to have a business partner who's very financially smart, and she's the one that keeps the lid on things and keeps us from just going crazy. But we do self-fund all of this stuff too, and we basically pour our profits right back into developing all this stuff. And that's how we're able to, afford it, is by our day job. We really truly work like all of this development we're talking about today is our hobby, but we all have a kind of a responsibility to also find ways to finance it. And that's through the projects that we do and the equipment that we sell. And so I really look at the industry, when the industry hires us to do a job or buys things from us, they're investing back in themselves because we invest back into the industry. That's what we're trying to do here, is cycle all of this around so that we give right back to the industry and create solutions for them. So, and most people really seem to like that idea, and we're not out there, borrowing money or doing anything like that. Saskatchewan people are too afraid of debt. So we just try to do it all on our own and find a way to make it all work. So it's a big part of it.
I'm sure in your brainstorming sessions, you got to figure out, what all could we do that's PoE powered and either speaks GPIO or speaks live wire or AES-67. And we mentioned, okay, maybe headphones. Now there have been at least one, maybe two microphones on the market that at least one of them was a prototype. And I think Neumann actually has or had one that would do AES-67, but I don't think it was PoE. But that'd be cool, you know, to have have USB mics, you know, why not an AOIP mic? Of course, the power drawn is very good.
And from our point of view, on a development point of view, we're trying to always leverage. We've got all this code that we've written. How can we leverage that into something else too? And so a lot of the things you see, there's somewhat like kind of, there's little clumps of development happening. You have a clump of things over here with all this GPIO stuff. You have a little clump of things happening over in the speaker and amplifier area. And then there's like something over my other shoulder here too. We've got our patched in, it's called, which is a patch panel. Now we're kind of getting into the RF world a little bit too, because we do RF installations. So that's a DIN sized patch panel and we build our own U-links for it. It's kind of neat. That's this guy back here. So we actually create our own U-links. It's all fully interlocked. So here's what the U-links look like. It's a nice little DIN connector. We know that patch panels exist, but we never came across any that are DIN. So anybody with a 1 or 2 kilowatt or 300 watt, maybe it's a standby and they want to do some patching, we build a patch panel for that. Right above that is our XR1, which is a unified hardware platform for our virtualization. So we have another clump of development happening around virtualization as the industry moves towards that. We've worked on things for that. So we really try to take an area and then build out from it. And then, you know, eventually, hopefully it all just sort of gets attached together and we have like all the solutions for everybody that I would ever want. And we just kind of keep growing and building and doing stuff like that.
You know, what never caught on, Tyler, was the PoE powered cart machine. Just it never, I only saw the light of day. But with return of vinyl, what about a PoE turntable?
A PoE turntable. I mean, I don't know why we don't just PoE everything. Just stop doing everything and just maybe it all be over for power over Ethernet. And then we'll do it wirelessly. And actually, that's another product that we have is a wireless on-air light. We call it AirLux. And we've developed a system because that came again from a need. We were doing, actually, I think it was a parliament building or something. It was an historic building that we weren't allowed to pull cable for. So we built a transmitter and a receiver and put that in. And now, again, someone else heard about it. And so that's another thing that we do is a wireless on-air light. I just call it WOAL, but I think the actual name that we sell it under is called AirLux, which is probably Latin or something. It's pretty cool.
Interesting. We're gonna take a break. Tyler, I'm sorry if the answer is no. I think it's yes. Do you guys represent Inovonics as a product line in Canada?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a shorter list of what we don't sell than what we do sell in Canada. In fact, Max Connect is one of our partners. We are a Max Connect outfit as well, but we do Inovonics as well. Yep, and all of those are great partners of ours. That all, like, we've been doing that for many years, and that's going to continue on. And that's a big part of what we do are things that fill gaps. We're not looking to compete with anybody when it comes to the stuff that we make. We're trying to fill gaps and complement the things that are already out there. So it's a really important thing that we mandate around here.
Well, in the U.S., Inovonics is represented by a number of dealers. One of those is Broadcasters General Store. And I know you guys are probably on a friendly basis with BGS. They tend to stay in the U.S., and you guys tend to be in Canada. But Inovonics is one of the product lines that they represent. And they're different things that they make now for RDS encoding, for modulation monitoring, for stream monitoring. For rebroadcasting receivers, for translators, just amazing stuff. And let me see if Suncast can perhaps bring up this web page. This is actually, I own this. This is the Aaron 650 product, and I have this one in Cleveland, Mississippi. And we've always had a real problem, and a lot of stations do. You may get an alarm, hey, I got a station that's off the air, or a listener call says your station's off the air. Well, in the Mississippi Delta area, we've got, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 radios, I think 10 or 11 radio stations. And frankly, not every one of our employees knows the difference between the transmitter is off and the audio is off. And so sometimes, you know, we remotely, me, my business partner, Larry Fuss, we need to determine these things. And you got to have a good tuner. You got to have a really solid way of discovering what's going on with your actual signals. Well, amazingly, due mostly to the power of the receiver that's built into the Aran 650 and also their Aran 655, which also does HD. This box just has my socks rolling up and down. It's amazing. We put off and put off and put off buying a good monitor like this and until Larry said, you know, we got to have something. And he bought the Aran 650. And I'm so glad he did. From one location, we have a big Yagi antenna, and it picks up every station that we have except for one, which is frankly 60-some miles away. And I don't think it picks it up a little bit, but not enough to be truly helpful. But it picks up all of our other FM stations, translators, and stations 40, 50 miles away, and of course the local ones as well, even ones that are on the backside of this Yagi antenna. And just so delightful. This is just so helpful to have this thing. I can remote into it from anywhere, from a phone, because it's a web page and it's so well designed. And it'll stream audio. You click a button in the upper left there, it'll stream your audio to you. It also tells you how your RDS data is doing. And I had advertised this product for a while back when Chris Tobin was my co-host. He talked about it quite a bit and just loved this thing. Well, I'm glad we got one. I'm so glad we did, because you can determine a lot about your signal from it. And it's not meant to be a mod monitor per se. It does show you the audio levels, but it doesn't show you total modulation. That's not its purpose. Really, it's a rebroadcast receiver. We have all of our stations programmed in as presets, and it's just terrific. They do have mod monitors at Inovonics, wonderful ones that have a lot of these same features of listening over the web to what's going on and checking out, you know, your HD1, your HD2, your HD3, and even your HD4. We're about to get the Aran 655, which is FM and HD, for our new station in Oxford, Mississippi. Oh, we've already got an Aran 655 for our stations in American Samoa. Just love these things. Thanks so much to Inovonics for making such a convenient and worthwhile tool, all of your tools. And here's something else. You go to InnovonicsBroadcast.com. That's the website, InnovonicsBroadcast.com, and they have online demos right there. You can go and try out a bunch of their different products online. They'll stream audio to yourself from their factory location. Check it out. It's also available. These, you can get your best deal from Broadcasters General Store. Their website is bgs.cc, and you can give them a call at 352-622-7700. That's Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc. Thanks a lot, BGS, Inovonics, sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack. I am in El Paso, Texas. We're getting ready for the SBE Ennis Workshop. If there's one coming anywhere near you, please try to go to it. I've been working with Kathy Oros a little bit on this one, but more on the one that's coming up in Nashville, actually in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, just outside Nashville, in, I believe it's in August. So we're getting some good speakers to talk about current topics of what's going on in broadcast technology there. So you can go to the website, sbe.org, to check that out. Anyway, I'm here getting ready for tomorrow's workshop, and we thought we'd do This Week in Radio Tech from here. We're a little bit Wi-Fi challenged here today, but thanks to Suncast for working with us. Our guest is Tyler Everett. He's the president and CEO of Pippin Technical Service in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. And Tyler, what's next on your hit parade that you'd like to tell us about technology-wise that you guys are doing? What's helpful to broadcasters these days?
Well, I think, you know, looking forward, and a lot of the talk is around virtualization and how that's going and what's happening and who's doing it. And, you know, I can honestly say that it reminds me a lot of when Axia first came along, when networked audio first started up, because it was a lot of people standing around waiting, and it was a lot of education on the part of the people trying to get the information out. So I feel like we're in a similar place right now. We're doing a lot of education. I've had a lot of conversations with people, been on a lot of calls with people, engineering teams, explaining and discussing, which I really enjoy. The feedback's been great. But beyond that, we actually do have deployments that are happening, stuff underway. And the reason that's important for everybody to know is because it means not only are we as a company getting our knowledge in place to be able to support people longer term, but the people that are providing it are also solidifying these products as we go along as well. And it's fast and furious, but yet also feels achingly slow sometimes. It's really an interesting kind of paradigm there. But it is an area of growth. It is important to know that just because that's there doesn't mean that you have to do any future projects that way. And also, you don't have to dive in with both feet and do everything that way. And I think that's one of the big strengths of all of this virtualization is you can literally pick and choose which parts of that you want to accommodate into your specific situation. And, you know, the companies that we represent are very, very big into it. And we're trying to be very big into it as well. And we're increasing our staff. I've added people here to be able to better support those types of initiatives. And we have products that we're working on as well. Not too surprising. And that's where I talked very briefly earlier about the XR1. And that's our version of a hardware device that we use. The XR1 it's really simple, yet it's also infinitely complex. That's what I love about it. And again, I bring Grant into the conversation because he was a big part of speccing it out. And on the surface, it's a computer. On the other hand, it's also an appliance because what we can do with the XR1 is install a bunch of virtual products, consoles, audio processors, voice processors, telephone systems, codecs, whatever that you need, or a combination of those into that 1U box that's right behind my shoulder on this side. And that can be an appliance you buy. And so if you are not in the position at the moment to get the knowledge needed to do that kind of stuff, that's okay. We can actually basically get you a shortcut into this. You take advantage of the benefits of virtualization, like being able to operate your radio station from a great distance or from home or any of those types of things that are being discussed, without having to necessarily bring a whole bunch of knowledge into the situation or hire people to support this stuff. That's what we're here to do. So that's a real big benefit of something like XR1 is we essentially do all the hard stuff and then send it out to you to hook it up and make it work. And we have had customers do just that. And so it's been able to allow them to take advantage of whatever aspect of virtualization is important to them.
You know, this notion of this XR1 and to kind of put it in my own words, this is a one rack unit computer. And I like the web page. Basically it says, quite enough to go in your studio, powerful enough to be your studio. Okay.
Yes,
use you mentioned is, hey, you can host free PBX. So you could, you know, if you're getting like a Telos VX system, you're going to need a SIP PBX. Now, it could be one that's already on site you have. It could be one hosted in the cloud. Or if you want to have one just for your broadcast stuff or for your business phones, you can do your own free PBX. And so you could provide that installed there, but it can also run like an Axia Altis, which is the new browser base. You browse into it, and you got an audio console that connects to the Axia network, or both, or VXS. So, what can you give me an idea of what kind of power this? It doesn't seem like it could be that powerful in one RU. What can it do?
It is a PC. It is fanless, so it's quiet, which is a really big important thing for when we're in the studios. If you look at this room right over my shoulder, I gotta get these backwards. That room right there is our data center or rack room. As a former broadcaster, when we moved into this building, I really wanted to have my own rack room again because I missed it. So we're doing some hosting for people for various projects. And in that room is an XR1. It's our phone system. It is our asterisk that we use. We also sell phone sets for you. So yes, it can not only be a gateway into your VX, but it can also be a telephone system for your radio station, for the offices, for all of the people up front. And the beauty of that is if somebody calls the front desk and they need to talk to the person on the air, or a person just won a prize, but now they want to talk to a sales rep or something, it's all one unified system that we can build. The XR1 that's over my shoulder on this side, over here, is actually an emergency alert system that we're putting together for somebody. So we're building emergency alert systems. The system itself is a i5 with a bunch of RAM and all the necessary bits and bobs to be a PC. We can install Linux, we can install Windows, whatever the situation requires. But what makes all this work is that we treat it like an appliance. We give it to you as though it's an appliance. So and that actually even has some financial or planning benefits for some people, because maybe I can justify buying an alert system, right? But I can't if I tell them it's on a computer, then the IT, and maybe it changes the procurement process.
Sure.
So we're actually able to let some people kind of shortcut their bureaucratic situation in their company by saying, well, I need this alert system, so we're just going to buy one of these, and we will take care of everything else. So I want to buy this console. I want it to be virtualized. Well, we can sell you the software and license it that way. And if a company or a broadcaster wants to do it that way, absolutely available. We offer that as well. It's just that we also have this other way of doing things which can have benefits. So it's a just like the web page says, it's powerful enough to work in to be your studio. We try to keep it quiet, and it isn't going to be server grade stuff. It can't, or be that level of performance. It can't, because it's fanless. So we also can build systems that are incredibly powerful to host many virtual things. It just won't be on the XR1 platform. So the XR1 fills a role for us. We even have people buying it just to use as their utility PC in their studio. They fire Windows on it and use it for the YouTubes and the web browsing and all that kind of stuff. So
I love that you're giving people another option in going to the virtualized world. And when we describe that, we describe putting broadcast functionality into Docker containers. Some people's eyes glaze over. I understand that. I don't fully, I can install a Docker container if you give me a script that makes it happen if I do everything right. And then there are plenty of IT people who are familiar with Docker containers but may not be familiar with the things it takes to have them do real-time audio. Most Docker functionalities on the planet are transactional based. And if there's an extra 3 milliseconds that it takes, well, you got to wait 3 more milliseconds to get your insurance policy or to get your PayPal money or whatever it may be. So it's important that people doing containerized software for broadcast kind of understand the right now immediacy that's required of CPU affinity or pinning a core to a function. That's good. So that's a little off-putting for some people. I get that. Then again, there are a couple of different companies making appliances on the market to do that. And it's wonderful that you guys have another one available. And I love the form factor, the one RU thing. And if you need to get, two or three of them to get all your functions done, fine. Maybe one by itself will do a couple of functions. I don't know how powerful that they are, but man, it's just so great that you're making this another option. And it comes in 2 different colors. So you can tell the person on the phone, it's the red box. Is the light on the red box? Because sometimes it's jealous.
Yeah, we like to do things with. And in fact, another aspect of what we do is a lot of the cases that are the stuff that we sell are powder coated in my own shop. So I'm kind of doing a little bit of that kind of stuff as well. So yeah, we try to keep our stuff noticeable, recognizable. And you're right, we offer the XR1 in 2 colors for that reason. So if you might have a color scheme you're going after, or just like you say, we want these ones to be the red ones so that we can tell a person, yeah, that's the red one. You got to go check the light on. So yeah, you're exactly right. And it's what we're trying to do is create more options for people.
So you can provide this to a customer as a computer. If they just want to have another computer, great. A SIP phone PBX, a VX system, a broadcast phone system. A broadcast mixer. There's 4SA audio processing, at least for streaming and HD, that's available sometime to come here soon for FM as well. Oh golly, are there other functions that people are asking for that I didn't just mention?
Well, I didn't keep good track of everything you said. We've got the alert system, audio processing, telephone, and asterisk. Also codecs, right? Yeah. So we could put the New Zephyr Connect on that as well. And the nice thing about that, of course, is you can scale it. So, you could buy an iPort, but then you're starting at 8 channels. Maybe you have a whole bunch at a data center, and then out at in the field, you only need a couple of channels to transmit and receive. That's where Zephyr Connect on an XR1 makes a lot of sense. So, and that XR1. And so what we have is we look at how much power is needed for all of these things, because you start looking at, I want to put in an Altus, and I want to put in a Vero, and I want to put in a VXS, and I want to put in one of these. How many do I need? Well, I could send you one box to it all. And in certain cases, that makes a lot of sense. And then in other cases, people are going to want to spread this out, maybe just for the sake of redundancy and that kind of thing. But what we can do is part of what we offer is the ability to figure out for you, well, how much resources needed for each one of those things. And I mean, a 8-channel Altus is different from a 24-channel Altus. So we figure out for you all of the sizing that you need, and then we can make recommendations on how much hardware is needed in order to do what you're trying to do. So, and whether it's XR1s or some other thing, you know, that's all part of that conversation that we have. But XR1s are literally the type of a product that we're building in mass. We mass produce those. We bring in lots of them, and they sit on the shelf for a short period of time. And then usually it's we got to do another run of XR1s. That's almost like it's almost like something I wake up hearing every morning, you know, as a business planner and stuff like that. Oh, I got to do another run of XR1s, because I hear that so often, because they just sell. They just move. So they've been popular.
Are there any automation systems that you install on an XR1 platform?
We definitely could. And in fact, I just did one here recently. It's funny you should bring that up, but we're the Encode dealer for Canada, and one of our customers is looking to cycle their hardware. And I'm actually, I'm sure this isn't the first one ever, but it's the first one that I've done where we're doing a playout system with no moving parts, because we're using solid state drives for all the playout and the boot and all that kind of stuff. It's all redundant. So that's on an XR1. We're using XR1 for playout systems now. Yeah.
Awesome. Wonderful.
And it doesn't to be, you know, somebody could call us up and say, we have a, you know, Wide Orbit's popular in Canada. We have a Wide Orbit system. And if they want to use XR1s for playout systems for that, we're ready.
Cool. Wonderful. Hey, we have got to take our last quick break. When we come back, we'll have a tip or two from Tyler. And if Tyler, if nothing else, maybe you could spend 30 seconds explaining Canada's EAS, or Emergency Alerting System. A friend of mine told me online that in Canada, it's basically all web-based. You don't do this station-to-station relay to get a message one place to another, which to me is, people say about reliability, but I'll tell you what, I'm just not so sure. It's all that reliable. It sure sounds bad, even in the best situations, I think it sounds. But anyway, maybe you could tune us in, because you mentioned that you're putting some systems like that together. All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Our show is brought to you in part by my amazing friends at Broadcast Bionics. Check this out.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio brings high quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Oh, love these guys and the products they make and the software that they have. They really understand what broadcasters do, because their products are all tested with real broadcasters in the UK. I think they have some amazing broadcasters there, and then they end up putting them out all over the world. Thanks so much, Broadcast Bionics, for sponsoring this week in radio tech. And besides Camera One, lots of other solutions. Check out their website. All right, our remaining couple of moments here with Tyler Everett of Pippin Technical Service. Tyler, you just got a big shout out a little while ago from Robert Millett. He lives in Notre-Dame-du-Nord, Quebec, and he says he's huge fan and loves your company.
Oh, well, I'm really glad to hear that. We enjoy working with some of our great customers in Quebec. They're some of the more passionate people in many ways, the broadcast world is no different. We've got a couple of great customers over there. Sometimes when you see an area code pop up, you just get excited because you know you're about to have a good conversation, and so appreciate hearing those kind words.
Well, and isn't that great to work with broadcasters who are passionate about what they do? And they want things to work really smoothly, really right. And they want to be right, not for their listeners, for their viewers, for TV broadcasters, and then for their own operators. And, of course, the engineers want things to run right, too. So it's good to have people keep us on our toes who are real pros.
Well, you know, I had a time to spend in a telecom. I was in a circle of people that were in telephones, right? And they were speaking the same language. We were talking about IP stuff and IT type stuff. And I just thought, man, I'm ever glad I'm in broadcasting. They're just cooler. Like, these guys are boring. I find radio people, broadcast people, they're just more fun. There's characters and personalities and, like you said, passionate people. And that's what I enjoy about being in this industry is just some of the great conversations we get to have. And in fact, when the Bionics thing was playing, I got thinking about Dan McQuillan. And if you ever want to have a great conversation, that guy is out there, so smart, intelligent, and always somebody that I find I learn from every conversation. So I really enjoy that.
Almost every week, I promise my viewers and listeners that we're going to have Dan back on again to talk about Virtual Rack. And we haven't been able to schedule him back on yet. We had a couple dates in mind. Those passed, and we couldn't get it done. And so we're going to have Dan back on because he's a pleasure to listen to. And, man, my brain just explodes by the time we get to the end of the hour.
So, he's a smart guy. He's one of those mentors to me. He's an inspiration, and I enjoy his company.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, Tyler, I don't know if you've got a tip. I got a quick tip, and that is, hey, my engineering friends, buddies, colleagues, take advantage of educational opportunities, even if it's just making sure you read articles, you watch for videos from, let's say, my employer, Telos Alliance. We put out a lot of videos. Our competitors do as well. You know, look for things where you can learn. And even if you don't live in Canada, or even if you don't think that you could be an easy customer of Pippin Technical Service, you can learn a lot by looking at their website and seeing what not only the products that they offer that are kind of exclusive to them, but the features that they have. And maybe you can think about, well, if people are asking for this, like that XR1 computer, that fanless or the quiet computer in 1RU, maybe that people are asking for that in Canada. Maybe it's right for you, even if you're not in Canada. Tyler, do you have anything else you want to wrap up with before we go?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that we're finding, and I go back to the virtualization, because we can go on and on about that. And one of the things is, I had an interesting conversation with someone. We talked about all the virtualization and how you can use a screen to be your console and stuff like that. And, you know, that's a big part of the virtualization. And he said, well, that's all really great and stuff, but you know what I'd really like is, do you make any hardware to control that? I thought that was funny because we went in a giant circle. We used to do it that way. Everybody wanted screens. Now they want something to control the screen. And so I think one of the other things is that I look at the automotive industry, you know, we all were told we can't use a phone when you're driving. It's distracting. And so what does the car companies do to respond to that? They put a whole bunch of iPads in front of us. It's nothing but glass in front of you in a car these days. And now I'm reading articles that talks about how we're seeing buttons coming back into cars as a result of user feedback. And I actually think that operating an on-air studio is a lot like operating a car. You're using muscle memory. You're trying to do things without necessarily looking down. And I might be old school, but I really think there's still a place for that in most studios, not all studios, but in a lot of studios. I think we can really learn from what the automotive industry is learning about integrating touchscreens into their environment. So I guess if I'm giving a tip, as you say, let's continue to learn from other industries and take what we can from them to apply them to what we do in our industry so that we can maybe learn from other people's experiences as well, because there's just so many other things out there that are happening. And I think that it's great to be able to observe and then bring that into what we do.
That's excellent advice. Watch what other industries are doing. I think that's so smart. In fact, if you don't like screens and you don't like knobs, pay attention, because Elon Musk will install a Neuralink in your disc jockeys, and you just think about it. And there you go. It'll happen.
That sounds scary.
Tyler, thank you so much for spending an hour with us. Really appreciate you, and love the work that you guys are doing. If people want to visit your website, the websites, ptsgear.com, and you can see these cool products, ptsgear.com. And your regular website would be?
pipintech.com, and that's also how you find us on email as well. Usually just whoever you want to find, Tyler or Grant or anyone, at pipintech.com.
Good deal. Tyler, thanks again. Really appreciate you and Pippin Technical Services. Really appreciate Suncast for managing our limited bandwidth that I've been suffering with today. So thank you very much, Suncast. Really appreciate you and all of our sponsors. We're going to be somewhere next week. I'm not sure where. Watch your Facebook. You'll find out. Appreciate you telling others about the show. Subscribe to it if you've got, if you use any kind of a podcast subscription thing. Hey, you don't have to remember to go look at it. It'll just download to your device automatically, or pop up and let you know you're there. On YouTube, subscribe to our channel. It's easy, and hit that little dinger to let you know when any episode drops, and you'll be the first to know. Really appreciate you. Thank you. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech.